Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. Kyrgyzstan postpones its parliamentary and presidential elections. Sadr Japarov, the interim prime minister, who is also an acting president, says first there needs to be constitutional reform. And the reform includes changes which will allow him to run for the highest office in the upcoming elections. Equally intriguing was his move earlier this week about the detention and subsequent release of known former corrupt officials. And within a few days of his term, Japarov also managed to squeeze a major policy decision about an economic amnesty. While all this is happening, there is little transparency, if any, about the rationale for these decisions in the decision-making process, legality, the end game, interests driving them, and the players behind these decisions. So we have lots of questions needing answers. To ponder around these questions, I'm joined by Dr. Asildorot Keldiba, Associate Researcher at the OSCE Academy in Bishkek, Mirsoljan Namazaliyev, founder of Central Asia Free Market Institute, a research center based in Bishkek, Parizat Said Burhanova, a local journalist and a television personality, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us on this important conversation. I know we have a lot to talk about, but first, let's start with the economic amnesty. Asal, what's the rationale for this?
I mean, it's a $1 million question because nobody really understands the logic. And as you rightly mentioned, the transparency of these processes. I think probably the acting president and Prime Minister Japarov wants this way to fill up the huge gaps in the budget, and this way to somehow create some more money in the budget, because we know that we're finishing this year with more than perhaps 30 billion som missing in the budget, and this is probably his way to fill the gaps in the budget. The problem is that the way all these compensations that he's asking from different corrupt politicians, including Matveyev, the calculations, nobody knows how they are made, based on what, why, for example, Matveyev is already paid 20 billion som and not 50 billion som. So nobody really knows how this works. And this raises a lot of questions and suspicions among the publics.
Mirsoljan, what's your take on it? I had a follow-up question about Matveyev's situation there, but Asal kind of clarified that. Okay, while we are talking about Matveyev being detained and then subsequently released, you have another kind of organized crime boss, Kamchi Kolbayev, being taken into custody. When we are looking into Kyrgyzstan from like 10,000 feet above, it just looks so confusing the way this is happening.
Indeed, it's very confusing what is happening in Kyrgyzstan. On the one hand, the arrest of Matveyev, which is known as a corruption boss in customs, and later the next day, the arrest of Kamchi Kolbayev. And still, there is a big mistrust. Not many people in Bishkek especially trust that they will stay there in prison, that the new government headed by Sadr Japarov, whether he has or doesn't have any connections with those two, because there has been some accusations that they have had that connection, especially after October 6th, when the events happened in Bishkek and the government was
changed. So you are talking about connection between... later. So, Mirsoljan, you are referring to connection between Matveyev and Japarov or someone else?
Both. There are different opinions in Kyrgyzstan. Of course, there is a massive amount of supporters of Mr. Japarov across the country. At the same time, there is a big belief that actually Mr. Japarov might be connected with Matveyev, or even might be connected with Kolbayev.
Then why he's detaining them?
So there was a public demand for them to be detained, for them to be arrested, as Mr. Japarov was accused of being connected with them. So even right now, after a day passed since the arrest of Kolbayev, or 2 days since this theatrical arrest of Mr. Matveyev, who was immediately released, and he promised to pay off some amount of money, which is around $25 million, after the accusations of Azatik and other investigative journalism about laundering or about taking above $700 million from the country. I think these are just the responses to public demand that those two need to be neutralized, and also maybe some kind of an international demand that if we want legitimacy of the new government, then we need to see that they don't have any ties with each other. So right now, even I do not understand what is going on with them, whether everything was agreed upon their arrest, or maybe they are just playing some kind of individual games after being together. So really, I cannot say that this is the exact thing what is happening with them. And I also wanted to respond quickly with regard to the economic amnesty that Mr. Japarov raised. It has already been 2 days. He gave 30 days to corrupt people, to former government officials, and those people who were raiding businesses and taking, using violence, the businesses. And then he mentioned about some businessmen who may have problems with tax payments, that he gives them 30 days to register and to be part of this economic amnesty. But actually, there needs to be a law. A real law that would pass through the parliament, approved by the president, and then there would be some trust by others. And the second thing is we don't still have it.
Right.
And how this amnesty is going to happen if there is no law, no legal framework for it. And I'm really not sure if he can collect any money with this. Either he and his government would aggressively catch some people and then say them, okay, just take part in this initiative and then you can be released. Or this initiative was built in order to legalize what Matraimov has earned through different corruption systems and schemes.
That raises another question, Mirsaljan. Is this even legal, what he's doing? And of course, there is a huge question about the transparency, the way these things are happening, but is it even legal?
I don't think so, because, for example, the constitution of the Kyrgyz Republic states that any such amnesties should pass through the parliament. So the parliament should discuss. And there are also other constitutional laws and other laws that say that everybody, every citizen is equal under the law. And if there is a special law that makes some other people more equal, then this should, of course, be discussed, and there should be some decision, especially a legal decision. And on the other hand, from the international perspective, from the international best practices, we know that those who were raiding businesses, those who were corruption officials, the amnesty of capital is not for them. And the capital amnesty does not release them from their responsibility before the law. So I am not a lawyer, but in my understanding, there is no logic and there is no connection with the law. So what we can only expect is that what Mr. Japarov has said, he needs to bring it as a paper, as a draft law to the parliament, and then we will discuss whether this is lawful or not.
Firizat, let me also bring you in here. I understand the rationale, very simple rationale. The financial situation might be complicated in the country, perhaps catastrophic, let me put it in this way. But it has been only a few days since Japarov is in power. When did the decisions like this, like the economic amnesty or the detaining a couple of people and releasing them later, when such decision was made and who was part of this process?
I think that all these decisions made by not only Japarov, but his like a friend, Kantchubek-Tashiev, who is always with him, and also like he has a huge amount of politicians who is working with Mr. Japarov now, all members of Mekenchil party, which was led by Kantchubek-Tashiev and Japarov in last elections, and also like I think maybe he has other people who is making, because it's really interesting, because all of the politicians, all the main politicians in Kyrgyzstan, not included in these cases, because now Tikebaev is back to parliament, but he's not seems happy about it. He's not seems happy about decisions I made, also about the postponing elections, also constitutional referendum, and so on, so on. Also, if I can, one of the main reasons why they arrest Matrayimov, also Kulbayev, I think it is all the international powers and other countries didn't accept that Mr. Japarov is a legal president, legal prime minister. And I think the only official congratulations was from the Uzbek prime minister, and not even Russian Federation didn't accept them as a legal. And so I think to build his image as a legal president, they arrest them, but it was like a theater. It was just acted as they are arrested, because how they can arrest all major organized crime figure without any actions.
Yeah, you are rightfully raising questions about the legitimacy of Japarov in the way international powers are kind of hesitant to congratulate him with he assuming power in Kyrgyzstan. Bruce, what have been the reactions so far, the type of things he has been doing in terms of economic amnesty and the detentions and the subsequent release of those people? What has been the local reactions so far to them, and how you read those reactions, if there is any?
There's a lot of things about the new leadership that I'm sure most people in Kyrgyzstan don't trust. You know, as was mentioned, you know, this the capture of the gangsters, for instance, was kind of interesting because, you know, of course, these are names that most people would know who Kolya Kyrgyz is and the Matveyeva family and everything. You know, and just look at the United States statement for one example. On the 13th of October, they released a statement that says they're concerned about the penetration of organized crime into politics in Kyrgyzstan. And, you know, but then when they detained Kolbayev, right, he's also on the U.S. list of, you know, people of, there's warrant out for him in the U.S. and seizing any assets on him. So then they release another statement, you know, welcoming the fact that this gangster who they've known about and put on their own list in 2012, I think, you know, is now in custody. Again, you know, it looked real staged. I mean, it was some of the most polite detentions, certainly in the case of Ryan Beck, name of the August of life. So that you know, they score some points for looking like they're going after organized crime. As Mirsul John was saying, you know, they needed some kind of victory. Not many people looked at this government as being legitimate, and Peresat said that too. Most people looked at them and didn't think that this was going to last, or that they got there by legitimate means. You know, again, it was rightly pointed out that only the Uzbek prime ministers congratulated this guy. No one else said anything about it at all. So they needed to do something to show that they weren't just a pack of gangsters, which is pretty much what everyone thinks they are. So, and in any case, so we got Matrayimov. And again, as was rightly mentioned, the reports that Klub and you know, the OCCRP and Azatik did showed that this guy had taken out $700 million from the country. So now they want him to pay $25 million. You know, why not? You know, you wonder if similar deals won't be cut with Kolbayev or something like that. I mean, it looks, on the surface, it looks like they're getting him. And $25 million is not a little amount of money, certainly, but it's not much compared to what he's alleged to have. You know, so that buys him time to get, he doesn't look like such an outlaw anymore, you know, or at least he's willing to pay that back. I mean, I saw one of those reports had his tax returns, some of his tax returns in there. He shouldn't even have $25 million. It's kind of strange that he would even cough that money up. That said, last point, the other countries have run these amnesties too in the past, right? Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan have done it before. And there was always the suspicion when that money was put back that it was just taken out, or there was some deal at the start that said, look, you got to bring some money back, put it in there, leave it there. Either we'll give it back to you, or we'll make sure that your business does really well in the future so that you earn all that money back that you brought in. You know, everyone's happy. It made the government look good, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Asil, of course, please feel free to add anything you would like to add into what we were talking about. And also about the reaction. We know the way Japarov got into power. I mean, there was a huge frustration by the people about the irregularities and corruption in the electoral system. Now that we are going to talk about the constitutional change, but now that the way he is running the office, which raises lots of questions. So how those people who were leading those protesters are reacting to the way he's using his power?
Just maybe a couple of things about the earlier questions, right? So for me, the arrests of Matraimov and of Kolbaev, not only they looked more as a populist move of a rather weak government who needs to gain and build trust within domestic but also the international areas, but for me it looked more like even much worse than that. It looked like really a fake action. If there were real arrests, they wouldn't look like this. So something tells me that actually these were prepared in advance. And I'm pretty sure that Kolbaev and Matraimov will get away from this without not much cost. So Chaparov's government is trying to now gain popularity, even more popularity, and this was the cheapest way to do that. But also what really the question behind is the speed of their successes. You know, they've been in place for 10 days or even less so, and within these 10 days they were so lucky, achieving one after another quite resonant things. And I really keep asking myself, can a team of two or three people, because I don't think that the party McEnchil consists more than that, can achieve such quick and rapid and swift results. Really, this actually leads to question whether there are larger, more influential, more important forces behind Japarov's nomination. And I've been withholding myself from going into conspiracy theories all these times because there are a lot of suspicions in Kyrgyzstan that the former president Bakiyev and his family has been backing Japarov and his party. But now more and more facts and more indicators show to things that he's not acting alone. He couldn't have so much power to act so rapidly. I mean, how come Kolbaev, one of the most influential leaders of the underground world, is captured just like that? Why he wasn't captured before? Well, because it was difficult to do, right, for a weak Kyrgyz state authorities.
Maybe there was not will to capture him during the past administration.
Of course, but still, the rapidity of these events cannot surprise.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think you were part of the discussion during our last show. I mean, we had lots of questions about who is this guy, and I am planning to talk about this just in a minute about who he is and how he is doing all this. But now about the postponement of the elections and the constitutional change, which will also going to bring us into the question, Asel, you are raising. I guess here the rationale is very clear because he wants to stay in the office. But what else does this change include, and also how he is doing all these? As Asel, you are raising the same question. So let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Dr. Asel Dolutkeldiba, associate researcher at the OSCE Academy in Bishkek, Mirsuljan Namazaliyev, founder of Central Asia Free Market Institute, a research center based in Bishkek, Farizat Saidburkhanova, a local journalist and television personality, also joining us from Bishkek, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague. I'm Mohamed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the head-spinning developments in Kyrgyzstan and the rationale behind them. Okay, so the constitutional change. Let me start with you, Mirsuljan. So what this change is about? I mean, what we read from international media, I mean, there could be lots of other rationales, but one rationale is that he wants to run for the office in the upcoming elections. Is there anything else?
For Japarov, it was everything is very quick. They quickly gathered the coalition that we could guess, but we also know what kind of a coalition he had in the first days and what kind of a coalition support he had even on October 9th when there was another rally, another demonstration against the criminals and pushing the members of parliament to vote for Mr. Japarov. So that coalition included some allies from Sooronbay Jeenbekov's power. That coalition coalition included people from Matraimov's environment, and including probably himself. And we also believe that that coalition included the criminal sphere, which is headed by Kamchi Kulbayev. So that big coalition for that moment was the reason of his success and for his fast movement and fast changes. But since then, many things changed.
But Mirsuljan, why he would, Mirsuljan, you are saying like there were a huge list of coalition. Why he? I mean, there couldn't be another person instead of Chabarov. I mean, why he?
I think he only got out from prison, but he had a very good friend, Kamchibek Tashiev, who had very good contacts with other people, with everybody that I listed previously who could be part of that coalition, that informal coalition, that hidden coalition. So maybe it was him, Mr. Tashiev, who brought this coalition together, and they put Sadr Japarov as the popular politician whose name was outspoken and shouted in streets, and actually, he immediately got a very big support throughout the country. It's not that many people or like the majority are against him. Actually, the majority is supporting Sadr Japarov. But this support came very fast. His coalition came very fast, and his actions were very fast. With this, he was able to come to the position where he is right now.
So you are saying
at the same moment,
I'm saying like you are saying that Tashiev is sitting in the driving seat. Is it what you are saying?
Yes, I believe that Tashiev was a person who was connected already with everybody, including the previous government, the customs corruption team, and the criminal spheres. So that is my guess why he was able to collect them quickly and to move quickly. And why I started from there, because they saw Sadr Japarov's and Tashiev's team, they saw that when they move fast and when they are not afraid and when they just move fast and change everything fast, it's their success story. So the same way they forced Sooronbay Jeenbekov to resign, and the same way they are continuing to force the members of parliament to vote for the draft laws that they want to be approved. And that's why he's also fast to sign those laws. Yesterday, they pushed this law that postponed the parliamentary elections and wrote to all of us that the constitutional reform is upcoming, probably before January 10, and then there will be a referendum and the presidential elections all in one day. So
yeah, I will.
So they're trying to use the time.
Yeah, let me push the constitutional related question to a backseat for now. Asal, you have lots of questions about who Japarov is. So did Mirsuljan resolve any of the puzzles that you have?
Of course. I mean, I think actually Japarov's phenomenon is so interesting because he's a result of coincidence of many, many factors. On the one hand, indeed, his image of a martyr, of a greatest martyr probably for the past 5 years. Second, I think, is the opportunist nature of oligarchs such as Matraimov, because Matraimov very quickly dumped his main ally, former president Jeenbekov, and switched to the side of Japarov, feeling that that's where their popular support is currently. So that decisive shift to Japarov was indeed very decisive, because that's where the money is, right? And a second or a third factor is that the weakness of the parliament. Today, the parliament just shows their absolute lack of legitimacy because it's unable to act independently as an independent body. So it's been bounded to where Japarov wants it to bound, right? And fourth, I think it's not only the coincidence of all these different historical and institutional and popular support factors, but also I think there is a strategy behind. I'm more and more inclined to think in this way, although I'm not really a conspiracy theorist at all, but I think there is a strategy behind why this guy was picked among many other politicians of such a caliber. And I'm inclined to think that there is at least the technological manipulation, all this communication tensions that Japarov is now building up between himself and the people. They're extremely effective. Their speeches, who is writing his speeches, they're extremely efficient. This is nothing to do with the speeches of the former presidents Jeenbekov or even Atambayev. They're extremely effective and they're working on the population. So all this really leaves a lot of questions whether Japarov is acting on his own or not.
Bruce, you have the same question, but let me bring you in.
I'm going to agree with pretty much everything that's been said here.
Yeah.
Again, we've gone over this ground a little bit before. It would be impossible on October 3rd to have predicted the chain of events that would end up seeing this guy get out of prison, right? He didn't have any part. You know, like I said, I just can't see someone came and sprung him out of prison and says, great, this is the situation. Let's take advantage of it. Where do we go from here, boss? It's just impossible. So, you know, there was the social media campaign that supported him and really brought him all this popularity. You know, so rightly pointed out, his speeches seemed to be a lot better. But there was, you know, there's already been a report in Open Democracy about the fact that on social media in Kyrgyz language, they really played him up as like a patriot and a popular leader.
Someone must be doing that, Bruce, right? I mean, someone was there, like there was some organization, some structure who were planning all these things. I mean,
right. Well, there was someone who knew how to tap into all these different possibilities for getting the message out and building this guy up to be popular really, really quick, you know, and they were real savvy. You know, again, Japarov was either in prison or been out of the country for like 7 years. It might have been one of the reasons he had some appeal, too, is because he wasn't tainted by any of what's happened in politics in Kyrgyzstan, you know, since 2012, really. All right. So in some ways, he's clean recently in the eyes of the people. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't pull off all the stuff that's happening by himself after sitting there in prison. You know, I mean, I see it every now and then someone gives him credit and says, well, he had nothing to do in prison but plan, you know, this kind of stuff. But again, it comes back to how would you know that the bad elections would result in him being freed? Mm-hmm. What if everyone had just accepted the results or there'd been minor protests or something, you know, and nothing would have happened? So he's clearly a front man for somebody. And the somebody is really, really clever and real savvy about how to get these things done fast. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but they perceive the situation. We've heard a couple times, things are moving very quickly.
Bruce, Misuljan was saying that somebody that you are referring to might be Tashiev. Is it something that you buy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he, you know, for the very reason John gave, he actually ties in with everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows all the people that can do this stuff, the people in the organized crime world, you know, the nationalists, you know, and on and on and on. And he's been a well-known figure for a long time, of course, in Kyrgyz politics, more better known than Japarov, certainly. I've been watching Kyrgyzstan since it was independent, and I know who Sadir Japarov is, but, you know, it just shows how much the media campaign is that people are saying, no, you know, I like him. They describe him as a long popular leader. That's not really how I remember him. People knew who he was. And there were protests when he was in court in 2017 and stuff involving a few hundred people. But he wasn't a major political figure.
Yeah.
He was like somewhere in the middle or something, you know, a mid-range political figure.
His highest political role was like being a member of parliament. I guess there is nothing more than that, is it?
Yeah, that was it. He did 2 years from 2005 to 2007. Then he was the head of the anti-corruption commission during one of the most corrupt times in Kyrgyzstan's history. His sister is wanted, and I think she was even tried in absentia for working with Maxim Bakiyev in a hostile takeover of a bank in Kyrgyzstan.
No, all these in mind, we are going to a constitutional change, which is happening, I guess, to allow him to run for the office. There's a clear chance that he will come back as a president. Then what's the plan there? So that somebody wants him to stay in the power, I guess. Let's talk about the constitutional change. So the constitutional change includes an article which will allow him to run for the office, which was not the case in the current constitution. So is it the only thing in the constitution, or is there anything else we can read between the lines that this change is going to bring?
So actually, our constitution states that currently acting president cannot be a candidate for the presidential elections.
Mm.
It doesn't say that the former acting president cannot be a candidate. So what he could do, not changing the constitution, is prior to the beginning of the election campaign, he could just resign and say, okay, I'm coming back, but this guy is going to be an acting president, acting prime minister. While I'm going for the elections, he could do that. And I think this would be more illegal than what he's doing right now. What is his real goal with the change of the constitution is probably either to give more power to the president, to make it more presidential system, because he's against the parliamentary system. He's against the proportional election system. And probably not only this, but he may draw some other roles and some other functions that the president would have. So probably he wants to get more power, and maybe they will also try to remove limits for the presidency. We don't really know yet. We haven't seen the draft of his constitutional proposal. And also, it seems that the discussions of the constitution and the adoption of the constitution through the parliament is going to happen before the new year. And maybe there will be a referendum to approve it together with the elections of the president. So still, he will be running for the president. And at the same time, the people will be voting for a new constitution. So with this, I have only one thought, that we are moving towards some kind of, again, authoritarian regime.
More authoritarian regime.
And later, maybe in some years, we'll have more troubles with it than we'd have a democracy.
Interesting. Besides allowing him to run for the office as part of this constitutional change, the other sections also include what? Like the election barrier? How you call that? The barrier in which...
Threshold.
Yeah, threshold to the parliament. I guess that's also part of the constitutional change. And also, this was the analysis by Mirsuljan, saying that this also might be because he wants more authority to the president. So based on all these, what is your analysis about the direction he's trying to take Kyrgyzstan? And it's clear to me that he wants to come back to the office, and he is sort of sure that he will be back in the office because he wants to have an empowered position in the presidential office.
Yeah, he's, he wants a presidential form of government that suits him better. I mean, I thought it was kind of insulting that he said that Kyrgyzstan was still 30 years away from being ready for a parliamentary form of government. I mean, they were already starting out on that direction. But, the only thing that's puzzled me is when he delayed the election. Again, like we've heard, everything was moving so quick, and this seemed like really his path. If he just kept things going so fast that people didn't have time to stop and think about what was happening for very long, then he might be able to do it. So I'm puzzled, except I knew that he needed the constitutional changes before he could have more power in the presidency and then be elected president and everything.
As Mirsuljan was saying, Bruce, I mean, he could run for the office without even making these changes in the constitution. Why he didn't
Well,
do
yeah,
that?
But if you change, he wants to change it so that, right now, after amendments not so long ago, it's put Kyrgyzstan on track to become a parliamentary form of government.
Right.
But he wants to take that to go the opposite direction and brings to put more power in the presidency and less in the parliament. You were talking about the threshold. The only problem I have, I understand the theory between the 3% threshold, you're going to get a lot more opposition parties in there, but... Mm. The problem I've always had with this, because the other countries have, Kazakhstan way, way long time ago, and even Kyrgyzstan under Akayev, when they didn't have that threshold and they were getting parties. When you get a lot of parties in there together, it's hard to agree on anything.
Right.
If you have 14, 15 parties or something in parliament, it's really hard to agree. So if you're the majority party and for some reason you have 50 seats, whereas everybody else has 3, 4, maybe 7 or something, then, you're able to push through what you want a lot easier because it's so fractured within parliament. So I said I'm mixed about that. I mean, 7% might have been too high, but I'm thinking 3%. I said at 3%, almost every party would probably, well, a lot, at least half the parties that were just in elections would have got in. And you have to wonder what the level of cooperation will be, which suits a pro-presidential system very well, the executive branch. Because if you have a parliament that has a hard time agreeing on anything, it makes it easier for you to rule yourself. Because you're the only one person that actually can make a decision, and there's just so much argument that your decision stands. No one approves it, no one rejects it, and you just go forward with it. Instead, well, at the same time, having at least like a facade that there's a parliament that's debating this whole thing and trying to legitimize your decision.
Right. Yeah. We also need to be concluding the discussion very soon, but just a final couple of points. Asil, let me bring you in here. I mean, in terms of the rationale, the reasoning why he's doing and what he's doing, what is your analysis about what he's trying to achieve here?
I think there is still a lot of uncertainty about where he's leading and what's his view of the political system in Kyrgyzstan, political development in the future. To be honest, although one thing is clear, that he wants to stay in power one way or another, and preferably in a fully presidential system, because this way he can accumulate powers and unilaterally govern the country. Yet, we also see that on the same day, there are opposite initiatives being launched. So while on the same day, deputies like Sulaymanov, they were trying really to lobby hard this law, which would lower the threshold from 7% to 3%. And on the same day, the deputies voted to actually hold, to postpone the elections, and maybe then to do the referendum. In case there will be a referendum, the new law now on lowering the threshold and also decreasing the deposit will be completely invalid, because the referendum would probably put on the agenda the vote either for the presidential system or the parliamentary system, but not even party parliamentary system, but more like a single mandate system. Under single mandate system, there is the question of the threshold is already not so relevant. So from what I'm saying is that the picture is very blurred. It's very unclear where Japarov is heading, and I have impression from what I gather from mass media, from different communications with opposition parties, is that he himself doesn't really know where he wants to go, because there is such a burden of issues that he has to currently take care of, from the pandemic to the economic situation to the budgetary collapse and many, many other things, that probably he doesn't really see the picture clearly. And that's why all these initiatives come in a very opposite and sometimes contradictory way. But then we see some strong decisions like this pressuring on the parliament to postpone the elections. Mm-hmm. And this is where I really think that there is somebody pulling the strings behind. He might himself not have a clear idea, but an organization or a group or a person behind him might have a clear idea.
Okay,
so that's where it really worries me.
Let me make this a final question and ask you this. Where our eyes should be to understand who is pulling the strings going forward, like where your eyes will be?
Well, that would, I mean, it's a difficult question, because there are a lot of conspiracy theories in Kyrgyzstan currently. And some of them are worthy to consider, some are really rubbish, and we have to be really careful not to speculate on that. But I think that the links, the connections go a little bit beyond Matraimov and Gurbayev.
Okay.
That's all I can say for the moment.
Okay. Let me get the same kind of a future-looking prognosis from all of you. So where your eyes will be to understand where Kyrgyzstan is headed going forward under Japarov, what you will be watching. Mirsaljan, let me start with you.
I actually agree with Asel. The very near future is very unpredictable. Japarov took power very quickly. And this power can be overtaken quickly, too, because nobody can see what is expecting us. Currently, we have this second wave of the pandemic. We don't have money in the budget. People are angry. And what happened since October 5 was some kind of this aggression from the people that was really unsatisfied with what was happening around. So, yes, currently there is a big support, but this support can shrink. Why I'm saying this is that he said the parliamentary elections are going to be in March 2021. So it might be around half a year. I don't know what they think. I don't know what they plan. But within half a year, everything can change. And maybe, in my understanding, if he would go to parliamentary elections today, he would get the majority of the votes. He would even get 65 seats. Among 120 MPs in the parliament. He would also become the president. And then, after some time, he could change the constitution. But they decided to flip it and to make it a little different. So for March, when people might still be angry, might get even more angry and not satisfied with what Japarov gave them within half a year, the situation can change.
Okay.
So from this perspective, still, we don't know what will happen. So we will be watching all together.
Yeah.
And about the strings, of course, I cannot also name one name. But I think there is a timeline when Japarov's and Tashiev's team cooperated with very different forces. With some of them, they do not cooperate anymore. They will start cooperating with some others very soon. So everything will change.
Okay.
But the fact is that they are the most powerful political force in the country. And right now, they control the office of the president, the office of the government. They control the parliament and the judiciary.
And so security, too.
One person that has all the power. And there is no checks and balances.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Parizad and Bruce, just final comments from you. So, yeah, we have lots of questions, and the elections are planned. And the latest news is in March in next year. So there's a couple of months until then. So where your eyes will be to determine where things are headed?
I think that this ratings of Mr. Japarov may fall very soon, because it's like a very big crisis, economical crisis, also budget deficit, and also a lot of things can be factor of these falls, because we should remember that he was put in the power not by the old people. He was put in the power by aggressive group of supporters of him. And then also we should remember that people are very angry about parliament, and if they will work till June 2021, then this unsatisfaction will just rise and rise. Also, I think we should also remember that this, even if that proven by the investigation journalist, his relations with the Matrayimovs and Kobayev will be proved by other groups, then his ratings will fall, and maybe he will just lead to the other demonstrations and protests.
Interesting. Bruce, where your eyes will be?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Perizat on a lot of that. I mean, I've always thought that this all happened so quickly that a lot of people are just stunned at what's happening. It's taking them a while to process everything that's going on. I can't believe that this guy can last that long, even with all the help that he's getting. Because, let's face it, the two things that are going to be most important in the coming months is the healthcare situation and the economy, and he can't do anything to change that. So it's not going to get better. In fact, the early signs, at least now, are it's worse. No one wants to give money to Kyrgyzstan. He'll get some money back from this economic amnesty that he's doing. But long term, no one wants to talk to him about giving money to him at all. So there's nothing that can correct the economic situation. And like I said, the pandemic, unfortunately, shows that it just comes and goes in waves. It seems like he got it under control, and then it comes back worse. And right now, Kyrgyzstan is going through a worse period. This is one of their spikes. So once winter goes, it starts coming to an end and everything's the same or worse, I would question how popular he would be and what the people would think might be necessary to get him out.
Right. Okay. Terrific. With this, unfortunately, we have to conclude the conversation right here. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Free Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. And also big thanks goes to Dr. Asal Dolat Kaldiva, associate researcher at the OC Academy in Bishkek, Mirsuljan Namaz Ali, founder of Central Asia Free Market Institute, a research center based in Bishkek, Parizat Said Burhanova, a local journalist and television personality. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.